You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Anybody tell you that I miss practice?
I made my mistakes.
If a coach say I miss practice,
whatever it is, it's not right on the teleprompter.
And y'all hear it, then that's that.
Don't you feel like that creates tension between East and West?
Yeah, I can't read it. There's no words on it.
People have got to know whether or not their president's a crook.
There's no words there.
Well, I'm not a crook.
What does that mean, to play us out?
I mean, I might have missed one practice this year.
What is... I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean?
Not a game. We talking about practice.
Hey, everybody. This is another episode of Same Old Clippers with Lewis Keene. Clippers had two losses over the past week, so another double episode, classic double episode. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm starting to notice a trend here. When the Clippers lose, they often lose again.
It is interesting because they go on like these long winning streaks and then lose in pairs. It's a very, very, it's been a very weird season, I think. In some ways, it's been kind of what you'd expect from a team dealing with like a lot of injuries and a lot of major roster turnover. But the way they've won and looked completely dominant and then looked really bad for kind of considerable stretches is also just kind of weird. I don't know. Let's dive in. What did you think of their losses to the Thunder and the Rockets?
The loss to the Rockets, I thought was pretty... this is going to sound wild, but it reminded me of when they blew the lead to the Thunder in Game 5 of the Western Conference Semifinals way back.
Okay.
The first 24 minutes of that game was the best half the Clippers have played all season, in my opinion. Their defense on Harden was really, like, they held him to 1 of 6 shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Their offense was pinging around the perimeter. They went into halftime up 15. Second half, that all went away really quickly, but there was something there in the first half that was reminiscent of a preview of what it might be with this team when they're really locked in against good competition. They've had good games, they've had good comebacks against good teams, like they've beaten the Rockets before.
Yeah.
But in terms of like overall impressiveness of like, whoa, this team has like that gear, that first half was to me as big of a takeaway from that game as what happened in the second half. What did you think about the game?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I actually only watched the first half live and then I went to sleep, as is a lot of my usual standard with West Coast and even Mountain Time games, because it's just too late when I have work the next day.
At least I think that they won.
Yeah, I went to sleep. I was like, oh, they look fantastic. Like, I'm happy. I can go to sleep. This is a lot of fun. And then wake up the next morning and Twitter is ablaze. You know, having rewatched it, it's really weird because I'm usually a big Clipper pessimist. You know, on our other show, Lob the Jam the Pod, I've been nicknamed Eeyore by some people because I'm always down. But I cannot get it in me to be worked up about these games. Like, they're 22-10. You know, they've dealt with so many injuries to like actually key players. They had a ton of roster turnover, and like the first half of the Rockets means way more to me than the second half. Like, their ability to lock in for an entire half against a really good team and show that level of play and that level of dominance on both ends is way more important to me than like them being able to hold a lead in a game in like mid-December. And you can say that the other way, like, oh, like they look great, but it's also still mid-December. But I mean, I just think, you know, the regular season is long. There are going to be disappointments, but their ability to kind of lock in and reach that level is important, because if you don't see that at all, you're not going to see it later on in the season when the games actually matter. So the fact that they can hit those heights is really important to me. And they look great in that first half. I mean, the second half, particularly the third quarter, yeah, and the wheels completely came off. But I'm just not that worried about it right now. I mean, do I think it's good that they keep blowing these like pretty significant leads? No. But do I think it's something that I'm really fretting about right now in like late December? It's not. The fact that they've had double digit leads and like, I forget, Farbod posted about this on Twitter. It was, I think maybe like their last 9 or 10 games, they've had double digit leads at some point. They're playing well for the most part. I mean, they have these really bad stretches like they had against the Rockets, but their ability to hit that high level pretty consistently is impressive to me, and I think that's important and more relevant.
Yeah, I agree with you that it's not necessarily cause for concern, you know, in capital C, capital F, capital C. But, like, at the same time, I don't want to be that fan or, like, that analyst or writer who looks at every game with the lens of, but should I panic or not? Or, you know, like, should I, you know, it, does this mean that they're not going to win the NBA Finals? Which is how many people who watch the game are trained to think. You know, the regular season is 82 games. The playoffs is never that many games. It's the majority of our viewing experience. Like,
yeah,
a game can be shitty and, you know, make us disappointed or upset, and, you know, point out things that went wrong without it having to, you know, mean something for the team's like broader ambitions. And like the thing about the Rockets game, the thing about the Thunder game that they had in common is now the team is like blown double digit leads, you know, that in really kind of ugly ways. You know, with the Rockets, they gave away the whole game in the third quarter pretty much.
Yeah.
And then the team lost its, you know, and Lou Williams got ejected, which we'll give him the benefit of the doubt for. And then in the Thunder game, it was just kind of like to me, it looked more like the team was trying to just coast towards the win, and it just, that didn't work.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were playing against a team that was pretty motivated. That whole team has heard a lot about the Clippers and how exciting they are now. and that whole, the current Clippers would not exist without the guys who are on the Thunder now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, one thing that has become a little bit of a theme early on this year is, or maybe a major theme, is a kind of complacency around how much this tracks towards the postseason. Well, you know, there's injuries, so we lost the game. Or like, Kawhi was sitting, you know, against the Thunder. So, well, it's not as bad of a loss. Or, you know, we had even what I said before, they had a great first half, and blowing the lead in the second half, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, are you sensing this at all with the team, where the stakes for the regular season just aren't there? I know.
Yeah.
this came up with the, and I don't know how much of a habit that is, you know, I don't want to like stress, cause it's just like not my style, but you know, the Clippers really didn't want the Rockets game as much as the Rockets did. And they didn't want the Bucks game as much as the Bucks did. And they didn't want, and it sounds like they don't really, quote unquote, want the Lakers game as much as Lakers do. And we'll talk more about that later. But, you know, this came up on the Brian Windhorst podcast, where they were previewing the game, where all the Lakers have put so much into this Clipper game, and the Clippers are just like, oh, it's great to play on Christmas, it's an honor. Kawhi's like, I actually have a funny story about this. Kawhi. So you know who, you know Rakuten?
Yeah.
You know what Rakuten is?
It's the they're the Chinese. They're a media company. Wait, are they media or?
Yeah. So like, so people don't really understand. So I don't know, right? So I asked some of the guys who were there with Rakuten press passes, and they or credentials, and there were three of them. It's a Japanese company, and they are the sponsor of the Warriors jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically described to me as Capital One, where
it's
basically a credit card company without being a bank. And then they said they also have streaming rights to the NBA in Japan.
Okay.
So they're a conglomerate that does more than one thing. But basically their calling card is as a credit card company. So because they're showing the game, they wanted the Rakuten reporters to ask the players about how much, you know, the Christmas Day game matters to them. So on Tuesday the Clippers played the Suns. And I'm there in the conference room after the game waiting for them to talk to Kawhi and Paul George. And this guy from Rakuten asks, you know, how much are you thinking about the game against the Lakers on Christmas? It's a big game. You know, and Kawhi's like, I'm not thinking about that at all because we have two games in between now and then. And then they ask Paul George, and Paul George is like, the Christmas Day game, you know, after the playoffs and the All-Star game, you know, it's really Christmas is like the big thing that like you look forward to. And he gave this really nice answer and to the exact same question. So fast forward to Thursday, they're playing the Rockets. And again, this time we're waiting. Kawhi comes out, asks him a few questions, and the Rakuten person says, how much are you thinking about the Christmas Day game against the Lakers? And the guy and Kawhi goes, you asked me that question the other day. I'm still not thinking about that because we have one more game before then. So you asked that already. And it was oh damn, Kawhi actually is like paying attention to like who's asking these questions and and it was kind of funny. So I went up to the Rakuten guy afterwards. Was like, why did you ask him that question again? What answer do you think he was going to get? And he's like, Rakuten is telling me to ask him this question. If I don't ask him this question, someone else will. And
interesting.
Every channel has like a package before the game where they get the players to talk about, oh, this game means so much or whatever, to hype it up. And Kawhi was just like, I'm not doing that right now. I'm not, you can try to get me after the next game. But
that's hilarious.
But so that was a digression. But so tell me, like, how annoying is this to you? The regular season, like, the playoff mindset?
It's a little bit, just because I think last year we got a little bit spoiled with a team that took every game super, super seriously. And the simple fact is most NBA teams do not operate like that. Like most NBA teams, whether because it's from complacency or because of like the playoff mindset or whatever, just don't focus like that every game. And last year, I mean, I think you could count on one hand the number of times the Clippers came into a game and were just unprepared or just didn't look like they were up for it that night. Like there were games where they were outplayed or just weren't playing well, but it was really rare to see them just not show up for a game, or not even a game, like more than like a 6-minute period.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think that spoiled Clippers fans. It was only one year, and this is something that used to happen in Lob City, where the Lob City teams were so good that they would frequently just annihilate opposing teams. But there were plenty of nights where they did not show up either, where, you know, Chris Paul would be like a little banged up. I mean, Chris Paul is super competitive, but like he'd be a little banged up, so he might not have been going 100%. And DJ and Blake had been, you know, out partying the night before or what have you. And like they would loaf around and they'd lose to like an awful Phoenix Suns team or like at the Kings or whatever. Like this is pretty common. I still don't like it though, because as you said, like I think in a weird way the NBA overemphasizes the postseason. Like most NBA basketball is the regular season. Like just over 50% of NBA teams make the playoffs, which means, you know, under 50% don't. And even for the teams that do, like almost all of their games are going to be in the regular season. Regular season is the bulk of NBA basketball. Yet, like, there's this weird thing that, like,
my whole playoffs, winter, it is my entire winter is watching NBA.
Right. And it's like, there's this weird thing that, like, the regular season doesn't matter. But it's like the regular season is almost the entirety of NBA basketball. Like if you don't like the regular season and don't care about it, like there's no point in following the NBA, you know? So, I mean, I think the idea that like, yeah, like the playoffs are really what matter. Like I can see it from a player standpoint, but from a fan watching the game standpoint, I think it's frustrating because, you know, these are the games that we're watching that, you know, we're spending our time with, and it's the bulk of our viewing experience. And if the players are not taking it all that seriously, it means we're not watching like the ideal optimized product. Which again, like I understand it from their perspective. You know, you don't want to go 100% hard on like a random regular season game. But I mean, I think it is, you know, a frustrating mindset to have. And it was why last season's team was so awesome to watch on a night in, night out basis.
Yeah, I think it's a good contrast with last season's team for sure. And that is probably contributing. Because I was saying, it's like, I don't think we blew very many 15, 16 point leads last year. But then I'm also thinking we didn't have them every game.
Right.
But yeah, I think one of the cool things about getting Kawhi Leonard and Paul George on your team is like, this makes the regular season really fun. Like this makes, you know, I'm watching 82 games. I'm going to be watching this team for 200 hours over the course of the winter. You know, having it be a team that like wins a lot and is like doing spectacular things on the court a lot, like improves my life. And like it makes me, you know, it makes a Wednesday night where I don't have, you know, anything to do and I'm approaching my 30s. You know, I'm not drinking on a Wednesday night, you know, I'm basically watching NBA. And so when your team is fun, then that brightens up the winter a little bit. And then when they kind of cave against worse teams because, you know, it's not worth the effort, you know, compared to how much they'll need that same energy in late April, it's just like, man, this is time of my life.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like that weird fan dichotomy where, like, you know, we're paying to watch. Like, you can't reasonably expect stuff from players, you know, beyond like a very base level of like effort and professionalism. But at the same time, like, it is our time, it is our money, and like, you know, we want to be entertained. And I mean, I think on a very base level, like, I don't think this team has been as fun to watch as last year's, which is pretty crazy. Like last year was, you know, like this plucky underdog and like America loves the underdogs. But like last year's team was also just fun as shit to watch, especially, you know, once they let go of like Avery Bradley and Marcin Gortat and, you know, the second half of the team. But even the first half, like watching Shea develop, you know, watching the Lou Trez pick and roll really come into shape last year, all that kind of stuff was great. And this year there really hasn't been a lot. I mean, I think, you know, we've seen, again, some improvement from Trez. You know, you've had
Zubats is the main – is the most enjoyable thing to watch about the team this year.
Yeah, I would agree. Zubats and then the nights when Paul George looks unstoppable are basically the nights when it's fun. And a lot of nights, like, they're just not that entertaining to watch. Like, even when they play well and win – it's not necessarily exciting or fun basketball, because I think a lot of the passion isn't there. You know, I don't think it's not a team that I think is, you know, not playing hard, but I do think it's a team that's not necessarily putting forth 100% effort and like really going that extra mile every single game, which is basically what we got last year. And yeah, like I think it's in some ways it has been disappointing, not in terms of how good they are or how good they will be, or that I think somehow they're not championship contenders, which I've somehow seen from people on Twitter. Like that stuff is ridiculous to me, but just that on a night to night basis, like I don't think they've been like that enjoyable to watch, which is disappointing. Like they should be. And they really haven't been. I mean, I think hopefully healthy, they will be. Like, I really like watching Landry Shamet play because I do like those off ball guys, watching them run around. And he's been injured a lot of the year. You know, Jamichael Green is a lot of fun to watch. Yeah. I mean, you know, he's not a guy you'd think of being like, oh, like, yeah, Jamichael Green is playing, like that'll get eyeballs. But Jamichael Green is a lot of fun to play, to watch play.
Yeah. He doesn't produce highlights necessarily, but he's fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think Derek Walton is really fun to watch. You know, again, kind of that last year mentality of not necessarily like a ton of talent, but super smart and plays like insanely hard on a play-by-play basis. So I hope like with the healthy updated roster, you know, they'll be a bit more fun. Yeah, I mean, I think it is disappointing. Like, I think, you know, asking teams to go 100% every single game is something that NBA teams just don't do very much. But it's something that, like, you know, would be nice to have. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the Thunder game is a perfect example of, like, they pretty much had that game in the mid-second quarter. Like, if they just played like they had the first quarter and a half, they would have won. Maybe not by like a ton, but they would have won. But instead, they just kind of took their foot off the pedal. The Thunder got back into the game. And then when the Clippers wanted to win, like they just couldn't make the shots and like they were turning the ball over and they'd lost all their rhythm. And then they lost. And like the Thunder, the score was pretty close, but the Thunder had that game from like the mid fourth quarter on. Like they were going to win that game. And like, you know, that's what happens when you take your foot off the pedal. Sometimes you can't refind it. And that's basically what happened. Like, I think the fourth quarter they were trying, but they just didn't have it the same way they had. So yeah, I mean, that was definitely a disappointing loss as well. More disappointing than the Rockets game, I think.
One thing that people have been talking about after the game, especially with the Thunder, is Lou Williams' defense. And I wrote a blog post about this for my newsletter about Lou Williams blocking people on social media, but his defense on the actual court has always left something to be desired.
If yeah.
Defense is something that you desire about generally, but which I can't necessarily say it is for everyone. Here's my take on this. Because mm-hmm. Someone ran by me, I'll say, it was Lucas, ran by a Lou for Drew Holiday trade package. Not as like a rumor or anything like that, but just like playing with the trade machine.
Yeah.
And obviously it would be a substantial upgrade defensively. But I'm thinking about it and it's like, well, first of all, the Clippers would never do that because I don't think they're trading Lou, period. Because he's like the Jay-Z of the team. You can't trade the team's like whole brand. I think he's the strongest avatar of the Clipper brand at this point. But to me, I actually think that would be a downgrade offensively, and especially when you consider like how much Lou is able to get out of Montrezl Harrell, his ability to score in isolation, and maybe his free throw shooting also.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you Well, yeah. So I'll leave it at that. I'm going to say, basically, it would be hard to find a defensive upgrade over Lou that would compare to the offensive downgrade that it would be.
Yeah, I mean, I think that particular trade package is interesting. I mean, I think Drew has had a down season, but last year he was like an all-NBA level player. As an overall player, clearly superior to Lou. But I do think Lou...
players in the NBA.
Yeah, but like, I mean, I do think Lou gets stuff out of Montrez that you might not get from literally any other player in the entire NBA. He can create his own shot better than Drew can. And honestly, like, I think he's probably a better passer and playmaker than Drew is. I think, you know, honestly, one of the complaints about Drew for years was that he's not a super traditional point guard. He is also more of like a combo scoring guard. You know, maybe a little bit more pass first than Lou Williams, but not necessarily a better passer. And there is a distinction there. Like, Lou is definitely score first. Drew is definitely more of a point guard in that he does move the ball around a lot. But Lou is a really good passer and playmaker, and I honestly don't know if Drew is a better one. Drew, obviously, massive upgrade defensively. You know, would not probably need the ball quite as much, which could be helpful. Again, definitely more natural in terms of, like, getting an offense into sets and calming things down. But, yeah, and I don't know, because the Clippers would have to give up other stuff. I don't know if the Pelicans would do that deal anyway. Lou's defense is really interesting to me because I was talking about this with Jovan yesterday on Twitter, as well as Lucas. But the weird thing is, like, the Clippers' defense has been really good this year. And it hasn't been, like, amazing or, like, world-beating, but they've been, like, a top 10 defense for most of the year. They've been a top 5 defense, really. The first couple games brought them way down. And since then, they've basically been, like, a top 5 defense. And so, to me, like, if you have a top 5 defense, you don't need to upgrade on defense that much. Like, does Lou get targeted? Yes. Is he a bad defender? Yes. But it clearly isn't hurting the overall team that much. Like, could they be a lot better if you swapped him out for Jrue Holiday? Of course. But, like, if you have a top 5 defense, I don't know if, like, perimeter defense, especially because perimeter defense is not nearly as important as wing or big man defense, is really that worth it, like, pursuing that kind of upgrade. So I just don't know how impactful Lou's bad defense is. Like, well, this was another thing. It's like, you see it because it's so obvious when teams target him, and it's like, oh, they're targeting Lou. Like, he's been really bad. You know, they need to do something about this. But then you look, and it's like, it looks worse than it is basically my point, for lack of a better, you know, term.
It definitely hurts the team, like, down the stretch of games.
Yeah.
The Thunder went at him down the stretch, and even when they weren't going at him straying off the ball, like, led to open threes, and it was just like, man, if you just stayed home, that's not a three, but they gave up, like, Schroeder killed them yesterday, not just Lou, but, yeah, there's the difference between having a top 5 defense in the regular season with Lou Williams and having a top 5 defense in the playoffs with Lou Williams is, in the playoffs, once everyone knows each other's shit and they start just going at one player and figuring out how to target one player over and over again, having that one immense liability on your defense means way more. The question is whether it means more than having one guy who can't shoot.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that, you know, ideally, with a fully healthy roster, Lou would be playing less. You know, he should not be playing more than 30 minutes a game. Like, he's in his 30s. He's played a lot of minutes. You know, he is a major defensive liability. He's not a guy who should be relied upon the way the Clippers are relying upon him, which I think is another part of the problem, is, like, he's overextended. You know, I think in the playoffs, like, if you keep him to, like, 25 minutes a game, like, yeah, that's still a lot of time for opposing teams to target him. But if you stagger it correctly, have him in more when the opposing bench is in, you have him less to close games out, and you run, like, you know, a Pat, Kawhi, PG, you know, Jamichael Green or Mo Harkless and then Zubats or Trez or whatever. Like, essentially the starting lineup, except maybe Trez or Zu, I mean, Trez or Jamichael Green in at the big man positions. Like, I think that's a perfectly good start, like, closing lineup. Like, I don't think you need Lou out there. Now, would you like to have Lou out there for shooting and playmaking and shot creation? Yeah. But, like, you know, the Clippers do have other options. Like, it's not like they have no other guards or wings who can fulfill that spot. So I just don't think it's as big an issue. Like, is he a really dreadful defender? Like, yeah, he's really bad. And I think you made a good point, which is that he's actually worse off ball than he is on ball. Like, people see them target him on ball, but it's really the off-ball defense and the help defense, which is way worse because he just loses his man all the time and helps too far. Like, again, with Schroeder, where he just let up a couple open threes because he was playing too far off. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm just not in the this team needs a trade camp yet. Like, I think it's early. I think that, you know, there are still things that we need to see from this team fully healthy before we can demand a trade, especially a big one. So those are kind of my thoughts on Lou. Like, I think it could be an issue, but I don't think it's something that needs to be resolved right now or that needs like a major shift in the lineup to clear up.
Christmas is coming, Rob. America. A holiday that we both celebrate by watching NBA. So let's, I'm not going to bother with the other four games on the slate. They're only one that matters. Is there another game that matters on the slate?
I could not even tell you the other games. Is Bucks Sixers one?
Maybe. I know Denver, New Orleans.
That's awful. That's atrocious. The Raptors are playing somebody. Is it Raptors, Sixers? I think Raptors, Sixers, Bucks, Celtics is in some combination the other. Yeah,
Bucks, Sixers.
Yeah.
Celtics, Raptors. I'm not going to be up at 9 a.m. to watch that game.
That'll be a good game, but I don't think it's important. Bucks, Sixers, I think that game will be
There's no important. Difference between a good game and an important game.
Bucks, Sixers, I think is kind of important for the Sixers. I'll probably watch that game.
It's at 11:30. Like, I'll probably wake up, watch it on my computer for 15 minutes. My laptop will run out of battery. I'll get up. I'll begin my morning routine, watch the third quarter, and then go on Twitter for 4 hours before starting the game. I do have a tweet scheduled for 4:59. PM right before the Lakers Clippers game starts.
What is it?
I'm not going to tell you. It's scheduled. follow me on Twitter.
Lakers Clippers is by far the most important game. I don't think that's really debatable. Yeah, and it's the only game I really care about. So, you know, whatever.
So we've been talking about how the Lakers are taking it more seriously.
Yeah.
It is a Laker home game.
Yep.
Lakers will be favored unless LeBron isn't playing, but I assume he will play. And I assume that this game is so important to the Lakers that they rested him. They gave him this, what do they call it? Like lateral.
I think he actually seems injured.
There's no way he's as injured as Anthony Davis right now.
That is true. That I agree with. But yeah, I mean, I think LeBron plays. When has LeBron ever missed a Christmas game? I don't even know.
No, he hasn't missed. No, he hasn't missed time this year, like until last year.
Yeah.
When he got hurt on Christmas.
Yeah. What do I think about this game? I mean, I think it's interesting because it's something we've touched on before. We've touched on earlier in this pod, really, which is that like, one of the NBA's issues is that they de-emphasize the regular season. So it's like, yeah, like the NBA doesn't matter until the playoffs or the NBA doesn't matter until Christmas. And you have to balance like that, which is that obviously the regular season is important because one, it determines who makes the playoffs and two, because that is the bulk of the NBA, with the simple fact that like one out of 82 games really can't mean all that much, especially in December. So I think there is a fine line there. And will I freak out about the game if the Clippers get blown out? Absolutely not. Like
blown out? I will.
I won't. I mean, I don't think that will happen. But if it does, I wouldn't freak out about it.
What do you mean freak out?
Be like, oh, like they're not on the same level as the Lakers. They're not championship contenders. Like that kind of stuff.
There's other reasons you can freak out.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just thinking like overreactions on Twitter. I do think it's important. Like, I think the Clippers have won some big games this year, but they've also lost against the Bucks twice. They've lost against the Rockets a couple times, once or twice. They haven't always played great against good teams, and I think that a win here would mean a lot for a team that's kind of been scuffling the past couple of weeks. So I do think it's important, and like I think it matters, and like I hope the Clippers come out strong and really go for it. But I wouldn't necessarily be overly concerned about the results.
Yeah, I think that if nothing else, the approach to this game from both teams has been revealing. Because the Lakers are not downplaying it. And the Lakers have kind of been upfront about this, that they don't, they don't abide the Clippers' attempt to make a dent into the Laker fan population of the sound or the Laker dominance of the sound, whatever. And the Clippers have been like, oh, this is any other game, is 1 out of 82. Is all the regular season games count the same? They're both feeling the same. Like, both teams care about this game more than they care about the game against Miami Heat. Like, that's not – they are human beings, and they do play in the same city, and they are not friends with each other. I think, like, Montrezl Harrell is probably the only guy on the Clippers who's friends with anyone on the Lakers, right?
No, I mean, I think Lou and LeBron are tight.
Why?
I've seen them comment on each other's IG posts before.
Yeah, okay.
I think Lou is tight with literally everybody.
Yeah. As long as he's not one of those people who does, like, the arm flexing thing on, like,
I don't think so. I don't know, though.
Flexing emoji.
That's a real bummer. I think... Yeah, I mean, I don't think they like each other. I mean, Paul George and LeBron have had a rivalry for, like, almost a decade now. It's, like, always super fun to watch them play each other. Going back to that Heat Pacers series where, like, they dabbed each other up when they were hitting, like, a ton of threes. Kawhi and LeBron have obviously played huge playoff series against each other before. Watching them go at it is fun.
LeBron is super salty that Kawhi didn't sign with him.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it should be a ton of fun. Like, I'm really excited for it. Like, again, like, am I spiritual well-being going to, like, depend upon this game? No, but, like, it should be, like, a lot of fun. Like, I'm really excited for it, and I think it's important. And it's tough to know what's going to happen. I agree. Like, I think LeBron will play. Until we get news that LeBron will play, it's kind of a little more up in the air. But in terms of the actual game itself, I mean – the Lakers have been the better team thus far this season, I think. But LeBron and AD are banged up, and the rest of their team is not that good. It's literally just those two guys with a heaping helping of Danny Green.
Caruso. Danny Green hasn't been good this year.
His defense is still good.
It's been KCP, Caruso.
KCP is honestly pretty good.
Dwight. Gasol, Shannon Brown, everyone.
Metal World Peace.
Lakers. Clarkson got traded today, and Zach Lowe praised the trade.
I didn't see that.
You see that he got traded?
I did see that he got traded. I didn't see the Zach Lowe response.
Can you imagine Jordan Clarkson in Utah?
The man is going to be in a deep depression.
He is going to schedule like weekend trips to Vegas from Salt Lake City
Absolutely. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I think the Lakers are definitely a little bit more keyed up about it. But like, I think
with,
they'll
Clarkson with his new tattoos. Have you seen his tattoo situation?
I have not, nor do I want to.
It's gone all the way up his neck now.
I have seen the up the neck. I didn't know about like the knee thing. But yeah, no,
what's the knee thing?
Didn't you say something about the knee? Or did you say neck? I thought you said knee.
Neck, up the neck.
Oh, okay. No, no. I mean, no.
His knee is also tattooed, but, you know.
I also think it's hilarious that this is the first trade that happens in, like, 6 months. It's Jordan Clarkson for Dante Exum. Just, like, the most inconsequential trade imaginable. NBA Twitter is like, oh, there's been a trade.
I have to say, this trade has me, like, officially worried about the Jazz. Like, the Jazz have been disappointing this year. Their record isn't that bad. They're, like, 16-10 or something like that. But
they're better than that, I think.
But trading for Jordan Clarkson in December, that has me definitely worried about this team.
Jordan Clarkson is never the answer to any question.
Right. They're 18-11. They're not very good.
I mean, I think he is actually an improvement on Dante Exum, because Dante Exum is not an NBA player and Jordan Clarkson is an NBA player. But giving up Exum, which again is whatever, and 2 seconds for Jordan Clarkson as like 2 second round picks is not huge, but like those are legitimate assets, and wasting them on Jordan Clarkson is not great. When those could be bundled in a bigger trade for a much better player.
Right, so. But it's just they want to get that thing done. People were talking about this team as really deep, but it does not go.
No, they're not deep.
Does not go below their starting lineup. Like, no. Their starting lineup is pretty famous, but I'm looking at their bench now. Moutier, Jeff Green.
Oh, Ed Davis.
People are excited about Ed Davis. George Niang. And Mike Conley has been trash.
I mean, that's the real issue. It's just Conley's been bad. And Ingles has been bad.
Yeah. But Ingles always starts bad, though.
Yeah, he needs to just get his self worked into shape a little bit.
Yeah, get the Jokic timeline.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not too worried about the Jazz. I never had them. I thought they'd be really good in the regular season, but I didn't have them on like the contender tier because I just don't think they have the top level talent. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the Lakers-Clippers game is big because those are the two best teams in the Western Conference. They're two of the best teams in the NBA, and like those games should matter and those games should be important.
Do you have a prediction?
I think the Clippers will win. In terms of actual score, I do not have one. I'll say 115-107.
I'll go 112-108 Lakers.
Okay. I mean, I could see it either way.
I think it'll come down in the last 2 minutes, though.
Yeah. Actually, really quickly, speaking of Lakers-Clippers, before we move on, there was a controversy the other day about the backpacks.
Yes.
And I know you have something you want to say regarding the Clippers and their backpacks, so I'll give you the floor.
Yeah. Well, every episode of the show, we disrespect a team or something like that. I do not respect the Clippers million backpacks promotion. Here's why. Because it is being branded as charity. I think the idea of Kawhi Leonard donating a million backpacks to LA area public school students is a wonderful idea. However, it ceases being anything other than marketing material once you put a Clipper logo on that backpack, which they have. And I the number of 1 million backpacks is kind of hard to like think about, you know, in terms of like what that looks like. What it looks like is I was at synagogue services the other day, and a friend of mine was like, my daughter came home with a Clippers backpack from, like, we do not live like in a like inner city area. Like, they gave these backpacks everywhere. It was all over LA County. And I don't like the idea of using kids as marketing material. I mean, like, the idea is like these kids who didn't have backpacks before are going to now have backpacks, right? Or they had like hand-me-down backpacks and now they have new backpacks. But all these kids are going to be walking around with the Clipper logo, which, not a cool logo. Not a cool logo. Aside from the optical of the optics of being like the free backpack, you know, like, oh, you're wearing like the free back, like Clipper backpack is the free backpack. I just don't like the idea of using kids as like billboards for your brand. And it's been advertised as this big charitable giving, which initially maybe the thought was there, but I can't really see it as anything else, especially because we know the Clippers are trying so hard to get the next generation to be Clippers fans. And it's not new. The Angels, you know, give away Angels gear and hats and jerseys to kids constantly. But just, I think the Clippers don't need to do that, and I don't like to see it, and I don't respect it.
I will go as far as you, but I do think – I agree to some extent. Like, I do think, you know, putting the logo on it does diminish it somewhat. But I do think at a certain point, like, there's the idea – I know in Judaism, I forget the exact name because I'm not up on my Jewish religious studies. Hopefully my dad has not listened this far in the podcast. But like, there's the idea that, like, you know, giving a gift for the sake of giving a gift is not as valuable as when it's, you know, more pure motivation. But I think, you know, it is still considered, you know, a good act as long as like the benefit and like the result is there. And like, at the end of the day, like, they are giving away these backpacks to help kids. And yeah, some of the kids might not really need the backpacks, and it might be like kind of a marketing ploy, but it is still, you know, hundreds of thousands of backpacks to kids who might not be able to afford backpacks or afford new backpacks. So, like, I think it is like a worthy endeavor. I think it could be done a little classier. And I do think, you know, enrolling like elementary school kids as part of this effective marketing PR program, you know, is maybe not the greatest. But I think in the end of the day, they are helping kids and they are helping families. So I'm fine with it. The thing I'm going to be disrespecting today is Blake Griffin, because guess what Blake Griffin is shooting from the field so far this year.
I just saw he's shooting like 36%, and I just want to say, the co-host of this podcast, Lewis Keene, traded Blake Griffin and Tobias Harris for Anthony Davis in fantasy about 6 weeks ago. And
great move.
Laughing. It's one of my trades that did not get vetoed. I've already had, I think, 3 trades vetoed this year.
And that one wasn't vetoed?
That one was not vetoed. I also I traded LaMarcus Aldridge and Kendrick Nunn for Paul George.
What?
When Paul George was hurt.
You're destroying this league. What?
And it got vetoed.
Oh, it got vetoed. That one should get vetoed. That's awful.
I've also lost trades. I traded Hassan Whiteside and Tyler Hero for DeJounte Murray.
Oh, that's tough.
Yeah.
But anyway.
DeJounte Murray, and now that person picked him up. So I get, but that was the Anthony Davis guy. So
okay. Yeah. Gotcha. But anyway, Blake Griffin, as you mentioned, shooting 37.3% from the field, 27% from three, only averaging 4.4 rebounds per game, 16 points. He has been legitimately really bad this year. Oh, yeah. Not just bad for Blake Griffin, but just bad. Really, really bad. And, you know, he probably shouldn't be playing. Like, he's just injured. The Pistons stink anyway. Like, he shouldn't be playing. It's pathetic that they're trotting him out there. That trade looks so bad from their angle. Like, even if Tobias Harris isn't really a star, like, over the next 5 years, you'd rather have him than Blake Griffin. And that's not even counting the other stuff they gave up in that trade. And the fact that they're stuck with Blake's contract for, like, I think another 3 years?
No, two.
Oh, two? That's still pretty bad.
Already almost over.
Yeah, Blake has been really tough this year. Blake, I mean, I wrote like a really big piece about him, I think 2.5, almost 3 years ago now, which I'm still really proud of, which is, it's one of my favorite pieces I think I've ever written, which is about how Blake Griffin's career has kind of been a disappointment. And that's before the last 3 years happened, which I'd say have been more disappointing.
And he was weirdly, like, appreciated last year on NBA Reddit for like growing as a 3-point shooter.
Yeah, but I mean, I think last year was really good, but I think even last year, like, the transition to being like a really good 3-point shooter was like a sign that like the athleticism and ability to do like actual Blake Griffin stuff, not really there anymore full time. And this year, like, I think he'll be better once he's healthier. But like, I mean, I think he's what, like 29, he's 30, and it could be, last year could be the last All-Star game we see from Blake Griffin. And like, he had a really good career, but I think it's kind of been disappointing, like, considering how absolutely breathtaking he was his rookie season, like the things that he could do on the basketball court that so few players have ever been able to do before, since probably ever will be able to do. And how great he was, and what year was that? His fourth season, the 2013-14 season, where he was like an MVP level player. You know, in his fourth season, he was still young. He was still like 24 years old. The NBA looked like it was his for the taking, and it just hasn't been.
2013-2014 was a magical time to be a Clippers Dodgers fan. That was my first year in the professional world. It was my first year after I graduated college. So I had a ton of time to watch sports. And that was the season, like in 2013, the Dodgers went 42-8 over a 50 game stretch. Right when it was Puig's rookie year.
Yep.
And then I remember before the NBA season started, I was like, the only thing I care about this season with the Clippers is I want Blake Griffin to average 25 points a game. If he does, that will be incredible, and I really won't care about anything else. That's basically what happened. He had the best year. I think he averaged like 24.5 or maybe 25, and then it just was phenomenal, and then they flamed out in that game five, which I mentioned earlier. But I'm not gonna quit on him yet, because he's in a terrible situation and he's getting paid a ton of money.
That's true.
But like, everyone's talking about the Blazers trading for Kevin Love. Tell me, what is the difference between trading for Kevin Love of this year and trading for Blake Griffin of last year?
And Blake last year is way better than Kevin Love now.
Okay. Take the average of that Blake Griffin and the Blake Griffin of now, which is reasonably, I think, we can expect is what he actually can do as a player. Why would that not be on the table the way that Kevin Love is?
I think it should be. I mean, I think the injuries are concerning, but Kevin Love has had tons of injuries too. I mean, I think Blake is less reliable as a 3-point shooter. Last year was kind of his breakout year, but I think, you know, 3-point shooting is variable season to season. I mean, I think there is at least decent possibility last year was an outlier for him as an outside shooter, whereas Kevin Love is, you know, historically really excellent 3-point shooter for a big man. I think that's a difference. But I mean, I think last year's Blake Griffin is way better than current Kevin Love. So even if you take the difference, I mean, I'd still say Love is probably less variable. You probably know more what you're getting from him. Blake has more upside. And the Blazers could use more upside. So I kind of like Blake for them. I still don't think it's going to happen because I don't know what they'd give the Pistons in return.
Yeah, right now they're trading him at like the rock bottom of his value.
But yeah.
Can you imagine if they had traded him last season at the peak of his value?
That's what they – I mean, that's what – I mean, that's not what the Clippers
escaped,
did. But.
They could have escaped – right. They could have escaped like all of the nightmares of the end of his deal that everyone said that the Pistons were going to be saddled with. If the Pistons had been like, look, this guy's averaging 24 – he's yeah. shooting like 39% from three, and he's completely reinvented himself. He's healthy. Take him off our hands. We'll make a we'll make you a deal. Ship him to Philadelphia for Tobias Harris, and then or to Dallas, right? I mean,
before the Porzingis trade.
Before the Porzingis trade, yeah. There isn't a non-market for a Kevin Love-ish player right now. We're talking about Gallinari moving. We're talking about Blake moving. Now we're talking about Kevin Love moving. There's no such thing as an untradeable contract in the NBA.
I do agree with that.
And Blake Griffin might be on the less tradable end of the spectrum. I think anyone could look at the numbers and at his contract and tell you that. But, you know, there's always another team signing a worse contract the next day. And so, you know, I would like to see him get into a better situation because you're sort of writing him off as, you know, the end of his All-Star playing career, which may be the case, but he can still really help a team. And I'd like to see that happen because you're describing his years as a Clipper as a disappointment. But, you know, guys go on to have long second and third lives in the NBA, even when their initial frisson of potential wears off.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I'd like to see it for him. Like, I would.
Knicks, baby.
The Knicks just lost at home to the Wizards, who had eight players on their roster. And Beal had an off game. The Knicks are just so embarrassing. That's who I'm disrespecting. Not out of any dislike for Blake, but just facts are the facts. And Blake has been awful this year, and he's making like $40 million. So that's tough. But, I don't know. Do you have anything else you're looking to promote or you know, talk about here? I think we've gone through everything pretty well.
Yeah. Subscribe to my newsletter. It's called Unstattable. Last week, I mentioned this briefly, but last week we did a fun post on all the people that Lou Williams has blocked on social media. And my plan was to interview him after the Rockets game and find out how many people are on his Twitter block list. But unfortunately, as you may have noticed, he was ejected from that game, which made it less appealing to go and ask him off the cuff something like that. I'm just not today.
Yeah, hate to see that.
I'll get to it eventually. It might be a season long process, but I will keep you updated.
That's cool. That's definitely an interesting project. As for me, for those who are listening who are still listening at this point, if so, thank you. If you haven't heard, you probably have heard, but Clips Nation will be undergoing some changes, which is that basically it will kind of cease to be Clips Nation. Vox Media is essentially taking it over by the end of March, probably earlier, I would guess. And so in response, Lucas and I have started our own website, or at least conceptualized our own website. The website has not officially launched yet. We're hoping to launch it by February 1st. The name will be 213 Hoops. We have a Patreon. There's a post on Clips Nation about it. Give us money if you'd like to. Really, at this point, it's mostly just for support. We don't want to put any content behind a paywall. So just however much money, you know, you're willing to give and want to spend. There are some perks for each tier, of course, because it is Patreon. They're mostly associated with podcasts. And we could even work some benefits for our own podcast, for this podcast in as well. Right now, they're all for the Law of the Jam. But we could work in some stuff as well. So if you have anything you'd like to add, let me know. But yeah, that's really about it. Content will be not as out there until the new site launches, because we do have posting restrictions from Vox Media. So I will not be able to post very much. But yeah, I think that's it for this episode of Same Old Clippers. Again, thank you for listening. Follow Lewis on Twitter at ThisLewis. Follow me at RichHomieFlom. And yeah, check us out.
We talking about practice.
All right, go, go.
10, 5, 4, 3.
That's tomorrow, and that is a...
10, 5, 4, 3.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice.
I can't do it.
I mean, how silly is that?
We'll do it live.
Practice?
Oh, no. We'll do it live.
Practice?
Do it live. I'll write it, and we'll do it live.
Not the game that I go out there and die for and play every game like it's my last. Not the game. We're talking about practice, man.
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today. I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks again for watching. We'll leave you with Sting and a cut off his new album. Take it away.
I mean, how silly is that?